Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning. Pastor Scheidbach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public. The devil be there. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, my dear friends. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Is your brain fatigued, sore from all the bruising it's receiving from the MSM and all this talk about the fiscal cliff? Rejoice, my friends, because it is time for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Will Obama and Boehner join hands like that famous thieving duo, Thelma and Louise, and drive the ship of state, as a little mixture of metaphors, over the fiscal cliff? What exactly is the fiscal cliff? Is it real? Or is this just another trumped-up crisis that Obama and company don't want to waste? Or is this something they're pumping in order to break down our resistance to giving in to those bums who want to take more of our money to waste? Oh, mercy. Is it really just as simple as, you know, raising taxes on the wealthiest 2% of our population as the fix? Are the Republicans right when they argue that raising taxes on the wealthy, A, does not avert a plunge over the fiscal cliff, and B, may very well be the final push over that cliff, for this economy? Or are the Democrats right when they argue that A, the very rich are simply not paying their fair share, and B, therefore there is no way they're going to accept any reductions in spending without an increase on the tax rate for those in the top 2%? So there. Yeah, interesting, isn't it? And this sets up my first observation. Do you notice, when listening carefully to both sides, the Democrats don't argue that increasing taxes in the top 2% of income earners will solve the problem. Their argument for increasing the tax rate for the top 2% is that it's not fair that they shouldn't pay more. They're not paying their fair share. Now, you think about it. Which argument do you suppose has the clearest tone of demagoguery? And rings like the fight bell in the class war, hey? Okay, folks, let's get started. Hang on, it's going to be a stimulating brain massage. But first, thank you to all my brain massage friends. Your encouragement throughout the year has been, it's been what's carried me along and encouraged me to keep on keeping on. And a special thanks to all of my friends who attended the Lights On evening with me. And then a deep and heartfelt thanks for those of you who attended that meeting and others of you who have sent in some support and financial help to the Brain Massage Show to cover our radio costs and help us build our war chest so we can expand the reach of our show. I want to say a heartfelt Merry Christmas to all of you and thank you. Okay, what is the fiscal cliff? By the end of your massage today, you'll have a clear idea of what it's all about. Basically, the term was invented by the media. And the first time it appeared in print was back in 1957. Believe it or not, Walter Stern wrote an article in which he described families facing the prospect of having to overborrow to buy their first house as facing a sort of personal fiscal cliff. It was used in the 70s and 80s, here and there, in the media to describe various city, state, or federal budget problems. But the first time it became established media jargon for serious financial problems was during New York's financial crisis back in 1975, where they were facing bankruptcy. And by the way, guess what they did not do to avoid their fiscal cliff? Yes, they did not raise taxes. The guy who navigated them through that nightmare knew. In fact, he is quoted as saying, quote, "You can tax yourself out of existence," end quote. Well, he advised the Democratic New York governor and the New York Republican senator to work together to call on the unions, the city employees, and so on to pitch in together, accept the reality that cuts were necessary, and they negotiated a budget that was viable and made the state credit worthy again. Anyway, something of an aside, they're probably the first to use the expression fiscal cliff in reference to Obamanomics was Jim DeMint in 2008. But it was Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Bernanke, who used it early this year during a speech before the Congressional Committee to describe what America faces on January 1st, 2013, unless our nation's financial house is put in order. So today, when you hear the term, it refers to what is supposed to happen to our nation's economy on January 1st, 2013, unless something is done to steer our country away from the fiscal cliff. What is it that makes January 1st, 2013 a fiscal cliff? Well, back in 2011, remember when we were all terrorized then by prospects, dark prospects of economic doom, unless we gave in and raised the debt limit to allow room for trillions of dollars in more spending. You remember? This or that company is too big to fail, so us little guys, you know, the taxpayers, had to cough up the bucks to bail them out and all that bit. Anyway, they hammered out a deal called the Budget Control Act of 2011. Now, this was a compromise to get the conservatives to accept the idea of raising the debt ceiling yet again. Essentially, it was, or I should say is, what the Democrats are asking for right now. Yeah, a combination of spending cuts with tax increases that cuts the deficit in half. The deal was supposed to shield conservatives from voter backlash for going along with raising the debt ceiling because it supposedly put a check on out-of-control spending. Now, here's the part you're going to love best. But first, let's recap. Make sure you're with me. The term fiscal cliff refers to the economic disaster that we are being told is going to happen on January 1st, 2013, if the Congress and the White House don't come to some agreement to avert it. Well, on January 1st, 2013, the terms of the Budget Control Act of 2011 kick in. The Budget Control Act of 2011, or called BCA, essentially says, provide a viable budget or else certain provisions will go automatically into effect. Well, these automatic provisions include the following. First, the Bush tax cuts will expire. There will be an automatic tax increase on workers. Temporary payroll tax cuts will end. Second, certain spending cuts are going to go automatically into effect, affecting Medicare, unemployment insurance, and most especially defense. You know, they always put deep defense cuts into these things, and along with some unserious entitlement cuts, you know, because that's how they control us. Because then they can talk about the fact that they have provided for entitlement spending cuts when they need to pacify the conservatives, and then talk about, oh no, look at these deep cuts in defense when they need to stir you up. Because at the end of the day, it's all about manipulating the taxpayer so the takers can go on taking and taking and taking. Oh, mercy, Thelma and Louise. Why the conservatives went along with this is beside the point for my immediate point, but the point is that this is what Obama and the Democrats right now are asking for in their negotiations with Boehner. Or in other words, going off the cliff is a win for the Dems. Yeah, it's what they want, right? It's what they want anyway. I mean, unless they can get fewer spending cuts and of entitlements, they'll take that. And in other words, it's all looking like it's going their way right now. But don't despair. There is hope. Please get this if you get nothing else from my analysis of the fiscal cliff. If we roll over the cliff in 2013 without the Congress and the White House coming to an agreement to avert it, well, the Dems win. If the GOP, and let's quit using the expression conservatives at this point. Let's just talk about the GOP, and there's a difference. Look, the GOP has very little ground to stand on in their negotiations, as you've probably noticed. Listen to the tone of the rhetoric, and think about this. The GOP are arguing against raising taxes on the top 2% of income earners in the country. How does that sound to you? I mean, they're just arguing. They're not explaining why that's a problem. They're just against it. Well, the Dems say, hey, you are not going to reduce the deficit or balance the budget on the backs of the poor. We insist that if you're going to ask them to pay in terms of lost benefits from the public treasury, then we insist that you ask the rich to pay too, that they pay their fair share. You see? Who's winning the rhetoric war here? And remember, it's about how it sounds. It's not about what these words actually mean in real life. It's how they sound. What's the emotional reaction these words call up? What sounds fair to you? You see, the Dems are succeeding at further establishing the GOP as for the rich, while they are for the poor. And it's actually, well, there's some partial truth to it, but it's not certainly not true when it comes to the conservatives. Meanwhile, the Dems are in a position that if they can maneuver the GOP to take the blame for the results of pushing the country over the fiscal cliff, because these GOPers have refused to make the rich pay their fair share, you see, and yet they want to cut into your entitlements, which of course takes money from the, what, the poor, right? I mean, the Dems are winning here. Every way you look at it, because A, they have said they want a mixed approach where you increase taxes and also provide some spending cuts. Of course, they never really come through with the spending cuts, do they? Remember Reagan, anyone? Although they like spending cuts that will reduce defense spending, or in other words, letting the clock run out and taking the country over the so-called fiscal cliff works perfectly for them. It's actually what they've already made clear they're willing to accept right now. So why should they negotiate with Boehner? Boehner can cry, fiscal cliff, all he wants. His boogeyman tactics are going to backfire on him. Let me explain. Time for a break. So we'll explain when I get back.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If you find yourself suddenly feeling like someone turned on a bright light inside your head, and this is followed by a sense of euphoria, described by some as a feeling that you have just been enveloped into the warm and comforting embrace of the truth, then you are a lights on listener. However, if you experience sudden bursts of rage, uncontrolled trembling of the lower lip, sweaty palms, and mental disorientation, then you are definitely a lights-off listener. Now that you know what symptoms to look for, call 888-770-8000 and leave your message. Is it lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. The pastor is ready to receive your message. Your brain massage will continue in a moment. Freely you have received, freely give. We don't charge for the brain massage show, but that doesn't mean we don't have to pay to air them on the radio. Many have asked if they can help. Thank you. If you'd like to join them, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Any amount is welcome.
I have written melodies for several of the Psalms, and I'm gratified that so many have enjoyed singing them. We produced a CD titled Singing Psalms. $10 covers the cost of the CD and includes a $3 donation to our ministry. Call 1-888-770-8000 to order yours today. Or go to www.santamarialighthouse.org and click on the bookstore button.
The brain massage experience is described by many as feeling like your mind has been liberated and your soul wrapped in the warm embrace of truth. Stay tuned for your brain massage experience. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your
mind. Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Will Obama, Boehner et al. Join hands like Thelma and Louise, those thieves, and run the car of state over the cliff? will crash in the crags at the bottom of the fiscal cliff. Bernanke identified January 1st, 2013 as America's fiscal cliff. He explained that unless we provide a budget that addresses the deficit in a serious way, the economy will go over the fiscal cliff and presumably crash. Many are questioning the analogy of a cliff to describe what will happen on January 1, 2013, but first let's recap. What is the fiscal cliff? On January 1, 2013, the Budget Control Act of 2011 kicks into effect. The hated Bush tax cuts will expire, much to the joy of Obama. Certain automatic spending cuts will go into effect, mostly affecting Medicare. Isn't that something Obama wants to raid anyway to pay for Obamacare? And the United States defense budget. Isn't that another item Obama has always had in his crosshairs? Huh? Along with some other token cuts that Obama and his team are grudgingly willing to accept. Or in other words, the fiscal cliff as defined by Bernanke is perfectly acceptable to Obama and company, leaving the GOP without ground to negotiate. Now, the GOP does not like this at all. They find themselves caught in a quandary. They went along with the Budget Control Act of 2011, only now to find it is entirely unacceptable to them. I guess they thought they had maneuvered the Dems into an agreement that was equally distasteful to both sides of the aisle, and have only recently begun to realize that with Obama in there, They've been snookered. Snookered, etymology, interesting. No time to explain means cheated, a skill to which the New Democrat is adept. Anyway, on January 1, 2013, unless Washington comes up with a fix, we are headed over the cliff. There are four specific things that will happen, and I will present them in the order they're presented in this very fine issue brief I've received from the Heritage Foundation on the question, what is the fiscal cliff? First, Taxmageddon. Quote, seven different categories of tax policy expire on January 1, causing a $494 billion tax increase in just 1 year, end quote. Now, you see, Obama just gets all warm and fuzzy talking like that. There has never been such a steep tax increase in a single year in the history of our country, and none of the money pundits know exactly what to expect, although all conservative pundits agree it doesn't look good for the economy. Most of this tax increase comes from the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. However, additionally, the payroll tax cut will end, the alternative minimum tax benefit will end, and, quote, a host of other policies that expire at year's end, end quote, all affect a tax increase. Now, the best way to understand this is to understand that this means the average American family will suffer an increase of over $4,100 in taxes. You see, you begin to see why Obama is really not concerned about going over this cliff. So long as he can blame the GOP for it, it works perfectly for him. He wins all the way around. The fact is, this one factor of the fiscal cliff is the greatest concern to the immediate future of our economy because it's the one all the capitalists are watching right now. I mean, they're hoarding their capital and making plans to scurry it out of the country if they have to, or hide it in various shelters and so on if they can, because they're not sure what's going to happen with taxes. This report says, quote, uncertainty created by the prospect of Taxmageddon is continuing to hurt the economy today, end quote. Why? Well, because, quote, businesses are increasingly concerned about a jump in their own tax burdens and, given the economy's poor outlook into next year, are reluctant to hire or invest, end quote. Now, I've touched on it several times, but listen, history has taught us that raising taxes on the so-called rich does not particularly hurt the rich. I mean, of course, it interferes with whatever plans they might have had for expanding their businesses, if that's part of their wealth, and so on, or developing further wealth. I mean, by the way, read providing jobs for others, huh? Or letting go of cash into the private sector in spending that supports many thousands of jobs. Buying stuff the poor aren't going to buy, made by some of those middle-class folks working. You understand? Good night. Who do you think buys these fancy cars and boats and lays down the big tips, you nincompoops? But anyway, guess who actually gets hurt? It's always the middle class and then the poor. It falls on their shoulders every time. Bible thump alert! Bible thump alert! Quote, the rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty, end quote, Proverbs 10:15. Hey, you know, the rich, those with real wealth, they don't get rocked by economic volatility like others who have little wealth. That's real property, large stashes of capital, so on. They have the wherewithal to protect themselves. I mean, they can move their capital into sheltered accounts or offshore accounts for all that matter. They can do all sorts of things. They've got the money to hire the people who can help them protect their city. But the middle class does not usually have that level of protection. Not that much. They can't so easily insulate themselves from the ups and downs of the economy. Their own economic circumstances are very closely tied to the economy, local economy, and then also the national economy, so that they ride up when it's up and down when it's down. And their up and down increases or decreases what they have as spendable income. And when it goes down too low for too long, it starts cutting into vital income. And I mean by that, that amount of income necessary to service their own debt and provide their needs. And when this happens, the poor suffer the most because it is the cumulative benevolence of the middle class that provides almost all the revenues used to help the poor. I wish these people had understanding. You really can tax yourself into extinction. It's a horrible idea to think you can tax people into prosperity. Anyway, it's really the uncertainty that creates a problem for the capitalists. Because really, once government makes up its mind, well, usually, once they can get a look at the lay of the land, well, they can make adjustments necessary and find ways to make some profit after all. But in the end, guess who picks up the increased costs of doing business? Yeah, the middle class and the poor, the working class. I mean, it hurts the smaller businesses too, because they have more difficulty competing in that kind of a economy or that kind of a market. The larger companies can get by with a very thin profit margin, but the smaller business can't. It won't work for them. And so the middle class shrinks, and the super wealthy get an additional advantage then of market share. It never works. It never works to help the poor or the middle class. Yeah. And do you understand what happens? Raising taxes is a bad idea. And the only worst idea is socializing all business, confiscating all wealth, which is exactly where this is all inevitably leading. And that leads to oppression and tyranny. And look at these third world countries, little dictatorships. And look what Russia was going through under their socialist program. Oh, good night. Come on, wake up. Anyway, the second thing, another provision in the Budget Control Act that goes into effect January 1, 2013, is something called sequestration. And sequestration comes from the word sequester, which means to hide away or isolate. And legally, it's the idea of taking by force possession of assets until a debt is paid. Oh, man, that's right up the Dems' alley, hey? They love the idea of forcibly taking assets. Oh, yeah. Anyway, the BCA Budget Control Act established caps on discretionary spending. Now, discretionary spending includes budget items that have to be funded each year. Social Security and Medicare are examples of mandatory spending. The revenues for those items are collected over the year and supposedly sequestered already to those accounts and must be available to those accounts. Then they're raided by the Congress. Well, I won't get into that right now. But all the cabinet departments, however, the Department of Education, government agencies like the EPA, all of that stuff are included in discretionary spending. Remember, this Budget Control Act was done as part of the deal to get conservatives to accept an increase in the debt limit. Keep that in mind. These caps on discretionary spending were supposed to save us $900 billion over 10 years. And then a super committee was appointed to come up with an additional $1.2 trillion in savings. Of course, the concern was that these guys, the special committee, the super committee, would not be able to accomplish this. And to give them some motivation, the deal was that if they failed, something called sequestration would automatically be implemented. And this sequestration applies automatic cuts over all budget items to total $1.2 trillion over 9 years in savings. And these cuts all begin January 1, 2013. Here's the problem. The Department of Defense gets hit the hardest. In fact, it carries 49.5% of all the cuts that come from sequestration. Almost half of the $1.2 trillion in cuts will come from the Department of Defense. At least $55 billion of those cuts will hit the Defense Department in 2013 alone. Are you beginning to understand why Democrats are not particularly interested in serious negotiations to avoid the so-called fiscal cliff? All right, let's look at another provision of the BCA, the Budget Control Act of 2011, that's going to land on us on January 1st, 2013. It's called the Doc Fix. The Doc Fix impacts Medicare. Now, Medicare, quote, Medicare is set for another crisis point come December 31st when Congress's latest Doc Fix agreement expires, end quote. Now, what's the Doc Fix all about? Well, this goes back before the Budget Control Act of 2011. It goes back to 1997 when Congress adopted something called the Sustainable Growth Rate Formula to pay doctors who treat Medicare patients. You see, it's about what the government pays to doctors who treat Medicare patients. It just so happens that this agreement expires coincident with Tex-Mageddon and sequestration. I mean, it's like the perfect storm, my friends. What it means to doctors is that they will take a 27% decrease in their pay. Now, I don't have time to explain the economics of maintaining a practice. And yes, doctors make good money for their good work, but it's not like what you might think. Most doctors are among those whose incomes are directly tied to the rise and fall of the economy, together with some enormous liability issues and overhead. And the bottom line is that this will virtually force many doctors to quit taking Medicare patients or go out of business or both. And what that means to you is a decrease in the availability and even in the quality of care, especially to those of you who are dependent on Medicare. How foolish. Anyway, the fourth thing to land on January 1 with the going over the fiscal cliff or might say another crag, if you will, at the bottom of the fiscal cliff, is unemployment benefits. Involuntarily unemployed workers are eligible to draw unemployment benefits from their state, and that's usually limited to 26 weeks, and in some states where they have a high unemployment rate, they can get an additional 13 weeks. And however, in 2010, because of our economic malaise, Congress extended temporary additional unemployment benefits to a maximum of 99 weeks, roughly 2 years. And the federal treasury covers, by the way, 100% of the extended coverage. Again, I mean, it's like the perfect storm because these benefits are going to expire December 31st, 2012. Or in other words, not doing something about the need to create jobs, jobs, jobs has brought us to the breaking point. Anyway, so that's the fiscal cliff, my friends. That's what we're looking at. And as you can see, if Obama can maneuver the GOP to continue making itself look exactly like the caricature Dems have painted of them for the last 50 years, then there's far more at the bottom of this cliff that pleases the new Democrat than that would disturb them. In balance, the new Democrat has got it all going their way. No doubt they're praying they can push us over this cliff and then point to the GOP and say, they did it, they did it, they did it. Now, let us fix it. And oh my soul, then we're really in for it. But relax, my dear friends. Because the fact is that on January 2nd, 2013, the economy will look pretty much like it does today. The fiscal cliff nomenclature is somewhat misleading. While it's true all these things go into effect on that date unless something's done, we don't hit the bottom of the cliff immediately. And it's not like Thelma and Louise driving over the cliff. You know, of course, it is tempting to want to, you know, to want to cast a whole pack of thieves up there as Thelma and Louise holding hands driving us off the cliff. But the fact is, it's more of a rapid slide down a sloping hill. They can still take action even after January 1st to avert hitting the bottom of this cliff or coming to the bottom of it. The biggest problem the GOP has is that they have pretty much no negotiating power at all on this. And after the plunge over the edge of the precipice, precisely because they've set it up like they have with this, with the fiscal cliff scare, well, they're going to have even less negotiating power. So next week, what the Congress ought to do, or what they should have done if they do take some action, assuming they'll follow precedent and tighten the screws on the taxpayer yet again, no matter what it is that they do. And then what you can do about all of this, I must sign off. My dear friends, I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you call and let me know you see that they are on. The number is 1-888-770-8000. That is 1-888-770-8000. Leave a message on our listener response hotline and say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree, or lights on if you've been helped with today's show, or lights off if you've been frustrated by today's show, whatever. Or you can write me by email going to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. Click on the Contact Us button and follow the prompts. Write me a letter by email. Lights on or lights off, I want to hear from you today. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
Like Paul Revere's lantern lighter, Pastor Scheidbach is lighting the lamps in the Belfry Arch, alerting all Americans that the commies are coming. The commies are coming. Help us spread the message. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com or write us at Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. and go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is preparing to massage your brain with stimulating insights.